the dogs are phenomenal. I've never had a dog team like that. It's pretty unbelievable, the dog team.
A Canadian wins the Yukon Quest. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 15th of February. Good evening. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a day in the life of a trainer at the Seward Sea Life Center.
I mean, our job as trainer, these guys being in captivity, is to keep their life as dynamic as we possibly can.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. ANSEP is the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, where every year Alaska Natives from all corners of the state graduate and become engineers, scientists, and physicians. Students can get involved as early as middle school, then move on to the University of Alaska Anchorage, Fairbanks, or Southeast in a program based on skill building, collaboration, and community. Google ANSEP for more information. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program.
Canadian musher Hans Scott won the Yukon Quest this afternoon in Whitehorse, Yukon Territory. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Hans Scott claimed his fourth Yukon Quest title, crossing the finish line in the 1,000-mile race from Fairbanks to Whitehorse at 1:35 in the afternoon Yukon time. Scott battled the race's only other four-time winner, Lance Mackey of Fairbanks, as well as last year's runner-up, Hugh Neff of Tok, through the entire race, finally managing to separate his team from the others for good, heading into the last checkpoint and mandatory 8-hour rest Sunday at Braeburn. Scott credited his dogs for the win, especially the 9 that held up all the way to the finish line.
The dogs are phenomenal. I've never had a dog team like that. I mean, they're still happy and motoring, so it's pretty unbelievable, that dog team.
Scott, who last won the Quest in 2004 and has focused more on the Iditarod in recent years, says this year he turned his attention back to the race where he's had the most success, logging an intense training season. Scott says another key element to his win in this year's Quest was staying focused during the race.
I never really played anybody else's game. I really stuck to my race plan right from the get-go, and I've really made them react to what I was doing.
Scott's Quest win is worth over $28,000 in prize money. His time of 9 days, 26 minutes sets a new speed record for the Quest, smashing the mark set by Sebastian Schnula in last year's race by a whopping 23 hours. Second and third place finishers Lance Mackey and Hugh Neff also broke the old record. Mushers credited the strong competition, good weather, and smooth trail for the speed. Lance Mackey says the top mushers amped up the pace by running their dogs longer with shorter rest in between. Mackey says the dog's potential is even greater than that shown in this year's record-setting performances.
To be honest with you, I think we can do it even faster. Not necessarily the dogs moving any faster, but they don't need as much rest as we took, and it seems like we didn't take that much. They don't need a whole lot. They're amazing athletes.
Mackey says he's very happy with his team, especially several new young dogs that made it all the way to the finish. Mackey also had high praise for Scott and his team.
Hans deserved it. He had a beautiful team. He worked his tail off from all the way to the finish line. And I thought I might have demoralized him a little bit and discouraged him from chasing after me with a couple of long runs and little rest, but I've done that to him in the past, and he backed off a little bit. And this year, he's not going for that. So back to the drawing board. I got to come up with something new, but I'm going to challenge him to come back. He said he's not coming back, but he has to for the tiebreaker.
Mackey and Scott will get a rematch next month in the other 1,000-mile race when Mackey tries to extend his streak of 3 Iditarod championships and Scott goes for his first win in the last great race. With help from Fairbanks Daily News Minor reporter Josh Armstrong in Whitehorse, I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks.
Quest mushers have a team of handlers behind them to make sure the 1,000-mile race goes as smoothly as possible. This year, former Olympian Rachel Steer signed up as a handler for her brother, Zach Steer. He's currently in fifth place. Rachel knew she was in for an adventure, but couldn't have predicted the twists and turns along the way. She says mechanical trouble forced the team to resort to a unique form of transportation.
This year, we got all the way up to Circle, and our dog truck died. And so we ran into a little bit of trouble, had to bum a ride with another dog truck back to Fairbanks. And we've done the second half of the race based out of Zach's minivan.
Is it a hardship? Are you doing your own driving? I mean, tell me about the whole adventure of it.
Well, we were going to be doing the driving the entire time. We just anticipated doing it out of a dog truck. You have a lot of equipment that comes along with you when you're mushing, and you have a dog truck assisting. You've got all your dog boxes that, in case dogs get dropped, you can put them into the dog boxes. You've got your rakes, your shovels, a place to put a spare sled, and, of course, all the extra equipment that comes along with the 36-hour layover that happens in Dawson City. When we had to move down to a minivan, we had to pare down our supplies quite significantly. We're making do in the minivan, but I think we've become some fine entertainment for the other handlers.
So you're in a minivan. Are some of the dogs, drop dogs, with you?
Yes, we are up to about 5 drop dogs right now. We have 2 dog kennels in the back part of the minivan, and so we'll have 2 dogs in each of those kennels for this hour-long drive to Whitehorse, and then one of them will sit outside of the kennel in the back of the van with us.
So
we're all one big family.
So other than that, what is the most difficult moment of your journey?
It's been a great adventure. It's been a lot of fun. It's really challenging. Of course, mushing is hard on the mushers themselves, but the handlers have not had a lot of sleep. It's a lot of you getting to a checkpoint, getting oriented, knowing what where your musher needs to go and where their supplies are. You're waiting up in the middle of the night for them to come in, and you're waiting up in the middle of the night for them to take off again. So it's been a real lack of sleep, and then jumping in the car to drive to the next place.
As far as an adventure goes, how does this rank in your life experience?
It ranks pretty high up there. I think this is very different from anything else I've done. It's a whole different crowd of people I've met and places to go, especially places that most of us wouldn't go to in the wintertime. And now that I've seen them and we've had fairly good weather, I would encourage other people to take a road trip like this in the winter. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, how's Zach holding up? What are you hearing from him?
He's pretty tired. These guys, all of these front runners, have been cutting their rest for the last few days. They've been running really long runs, relatively short rests, and they're just physically and mentally exhausted. You can just see it in the way that they're talking and moving. They're looking forward to getting done.
Video of Rachel's trip is on APRN.org. Her brother Zach left the Braeburn checkpoint in 5th place at 3:30 this afternoon. Alaska Pacific University coach Holly Brooks skied in her first Olympic race today, the women's 10-kilometer skate. She placed 42nd. Back in the USA house in the afternoon, Brooks called it a good start to her Olympic experience. She says the course was in excellent shape despite marginal training conditions in the last few days.
I don't know, it fell right in the middle between, you know, the rock hard conditions that we've had and kind of the like 8 inches of slop that we had a couple days before that. So the conditions were great. I feel like my race was solid. Of course, I would always like to do a little bit better results-wise, but I don't think I can be too disappointed.
Brooks says it was a good warm-up for the rest of the week. She'll ski in the Classic Sprint this Wednesday and the 15-kilometer pursuit race on Friday. Keegan Randall was going to ski today's race but opted to sit it out to focus on her best event, the sprint. The U.S. men's cross-country ski team had a disappointing day at the 15-kilometer skate race. Alaskan James Southam placed 48th, the best showing among the Americans. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a permit violation at the Pebble Mine puts environmental groups on watch.
We just simply cannot trust science that's paid for by the industry.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist awards. Learn more at rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Both House and Senate Education Committees today introduced amendments to the governor's proposed performance-based scholarship that would recognize the financial needs of high school graduates and their families. The governor's plan would give university scholarships to graduates who complete a common curriculum and who pass a national standards test. The amount of the scholarship would vary depending on the student's grade point average, but legislators, particularly those from rural areas of the state, say the governor's plan discriminates against less fortunate students. Nome Democrat Neil Foster says the money isn't needed for those students from well-off families and schools, but he'd like to see it weighted for those who would have trouble getting to school without it.
You don't want to reward somebody if they've got a D average. But at the same time, I think that, if some elements of this could put more focus on the people that really need the money, and putting more of that money in that direction, then I certainly support that.
The House amendment was drafted by the Department of Education. It would provide 50% of any unmet financial needs for a student who has already qualified. Those unmet needs are determined by federal standards. Commissioner Larry Ledoux says that adding on the assistance only to those who have already qualified would open up a college education to students who still can't afford it. He says it does not lower standards, and it keeps the goal of improving the educational base in local school districts.
It's very important that we don't lose sight of the reform agenda associated with this program. It's a challenge to Alaska that we can, raise the standard of our young people. Just if we don't have the accountability first, if we don't prepare them with the college prep curriculum, they're not going to be successful.
The Senate's approach to including a needs-based element would add an entirely new level of scholarship. Still undecided is the option of an extra amount of money for those students with unmet needs. But it also adds what committee staff member Murray Richmond calls flexibility for students in those schools that won't be able to meet the curriculum requirements.
We're saying to the schools in Alaska, we want to beef up your curriculums. And as this bill goes through, we need to remember that that's part of the mandate of the governor's bill.
The Senate bill will be back for further consideration on Friday of this week. The House Education Committee will meet next Monday, where its amendment will be debated. Sea Alaska says a survey it conducted shows more than half of Southeast Alaskans support a land selection bill the Native Corporation is trying to push through Congress. The poll shows support increasing when residents learn more about the legislation, but opponents say they've found out enough to know it's a bad idea. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The survey was conducted in December before the latest controversy about the bill. That came after State Senator and Sea Alaska Board Chairman Albert Kukesh made comments to the Craig City Council that many interpreted as threats. The message appeared to be support the legislation or community projects might lose funding. That led to an outcry from opponents and requests for congressional hearings on Prince of Wales Island. That's the location of many of the 85,000 acres of prime timberland the corporation wants to select. Sea Alaska released survey results at a press conference restating the bill's rationale. CEO Chris McNeil says the corporation could select its remaining land claims without legislation. But that's Tongass National Forest acreage most people want to protect.
Under current law, much of the land available for selection is inventoried roadless areas, intact watersheds, municipal watersheds surrounding our villages, and high-value fish and wildlife habitat, which is important for both subsistence and commercial fisheries. Sea Alaska agrees with many members of the conservation communities that these lands are better suited for public ownership.
McNeil calls the legislation a more environmentally friendly alternative. Polling on the land claims bill was part of a much larger survey. About 600 Southeast Alaskans were asked about community values, jobs, alternative energy, development, and so on. After asking a series of questions on economics and logging, pollsters introduced SeaAlaska's land selection bill. They explained the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, quote, promised to return productive areas of land to SeaAlaska Corporation for the benefit of the native people of Southeast Alaska. They said the land had not been fully conveyed and the bill would remedy the situation. Adam Davis is a partner in the Oregon research firm that conducted the poll.
We asked the full sample how many of them had heard of it, and 55% said yes, they had heard of it, 42% said no, and 3%, I may have heard of it, maybe not, I don't know.
The firm then asked about SeaAlaska's legislation. 55%, the same number that knew about the bill, expressed support. 20% were opposed. The remaining 25% didn't know.
If you do a little subgroup analysis and you ask those people who were aware of the legislation initially, before we gave them our neutral objective description, percentage actually increases to 63% support for the legislation.
Opponents say the bill might help SeaAlaska, but it will hurt Southeast residents. Myla Polstra owns the Sunrise Lodge in Edna Bay on Kosciuszko Island, just west of Prince of Wales. She says SeaAlaska's proposed selections on the island would shut her out of Forest Service land she uses for ecotours. And that's not all.
We have two commercial sawmills on the island that use small timber sales from the Forest Service to produce lumber for home packages and, you know, for development here. There's just so much of our economic infrastructure here is just going to be wiped out by the loss of the public lands that this community has used for almost 30 years.
Similar concerns have come from Craig and Thorne Bay. Other critics say SeaAlaska logging, which faces less regulation than Forest Service land logging, will harm fish and wildlife. Whatever Southeast residents think, the bill's fate will be decided in Congress, where it's only had one hearing despite a 2.5-year effort. In Juneau, I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
Senator Mark Begich heads to Fairbanks and Kotzebue this week to meet with veterans and veteran services providers. Begich is a member of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. He says jobs and health care for vets will top the agenda.
So we have great challenges in delivering those services. More veterans today are living in rural communities across this country. So your delivery systems have always been based on urban situations. So think about in Alaska. If you're a veteran in rural Alaska, to get care, the odds are you're going to fly to a hub. Then if Anchorage can provide service, more likely you're going to go to Seattle. So we're working on some demonstration projects where there's a partnership with Indian Health Services, for example, and delivering in some of our regional medical facilities, because we think that's a better way to deliver.
Veterans Committee field hearings are set for Anchorage on Tuesday, Fairbanks on Wednesday, and a roundtable discussion at Kotzebue's Assembly Chambers is scheduled for Thursday. Begich says Alaska has the highest percentage of veterans per capita in the United States. Begich will chair the field hearings in Anchorage and Fairbanks. He says the Veterans Administration is dealing with a new kind of support system. 40 years ago, the majority of veterans were single males.
Today, 75-80% are families. And that means your whole system of support for those families has to change. It can't be just barracks and slam them in and hope it all works out. There's families, there's kids now. You have more women in the military than ever before. So you will have, for the first time in a lot of ways, for commanders to deal with not the woman at home, but the man at home. So it's a very interesting dynamic that's changing. But that's why we're having these hearings.
Senator Begich will discuss hiring and transition issues for vets in Wasilla tomorrow afternoon. Following the Fairbanks field hearings, he will join with leaders of the employers in support of the Guard and Reserve in support of military service members and their families.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. ACS. With Android on ACS, an app is available to listen to NPR programming on your phone. Complete details at acsalaska.com. And by GrantStation, your fast track to funding on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years.
The Pebble Partnership has reached a settlement with the state of Alaska for some self-reported water permit violations that happened over the last 3 years. KDLG's Mike Mason has the details.
In October of last year, the Pebble Partnership, which is spearheading development of the Pebble Mine near Iliamna Lake, identified that it had violated conditions of its temporary water use authorizations by withdrawing water at some of its drilling sites from sources not specified under the permits. Mike Heatwall is a spokesman for the Pebble Partnership.
We shared information with the state indicating that it looked like we had withdrawn water from sources that weren't authorized. But we also felt it important to point out that we have lived up to the terms and conditions of all the permits that we operate under, which did not have that that authorization.
The settlement reached between the state of Alaska and the Pebble Partnership calls for a fine of $45,000. The settlement also stipulates that the Pebble Partnership prepare a detailed water withdrawal plan that is subject to approval by DNR and ADF&G. That plan calls for the partnership to submit appropriate maps that show specific water sources prior to drilling and the development of a plan for coordination and training of field staff, geologists, engineers, drillers, and other workers involved in the placement of intake hoses. The water withdrawal plan also calls for the partnership to appoint a compliance officer to be responsible for confirming that any water source being used has the appropriate authorization. Heatwall confirms that the water withdrawal plan must be submitted to the state before February 20th.
In the letter that we sent to the DNR in November, we proposed some actions that we were recommending to take to make sure that this situation does not happen again, including point accountability at our site for an individual for securing the appropriate water authorizations and putting some GPS locators on our drill rigs so that we're all clear on where we are and where we're recommending our water withdrawals.
As part of the settlement, the state of Alaska reserves the right to conduct a field inspection of the areas of the unauthorized water withdrawals, and if the state determines that unauthorized withdrawals have caused adverse environmental effects, they can reopen the case, which was basically resolved by the settlement announced on Friday. The partnership confirms that the unpermitted use of water sources was used in the drilling of about 45 holes, and the unpermitted use took place in 2007, 2008, and in 2009. The unpermitted use of water and the other violations made public on Friday is disturbing to Anders Gustafsson, the executive director of the Renewable Resources Coalition.
You know, one of the things that I first think about with these kind of things is, yeah, you get fines, and fines are being placed, and it's appropriate. But unfortunately, these fines don't take back what's already happened.
In a press release issued Friday afternoon, Gustafsson and the Renewable Resources Coalition commended the Alaska Department of Natural Resources on their actions. However, Gustafsson remarked that Alaskans deserve an independent, multidisciplinary scientific review of the Pebble Project.
We just simply cannot trust science that's paid for by the industry. I mean, we can't in good faith just follow them blindly into the woods when they say that they invented the compass and here's how we're going to get through this. We need to have somebody there looking at this who's unbiased, a third-party review, and I think that it's the legislature's job to step up and make that happen, and they have a great opportunity to do that right now.
In a letter dated January 14th, Dick Milius, the director of the Alaska Division of Mining, Land, and Water, suspended several temporary water use authorizations and a miscellaneous land use permit until the water withdrawal plan is submitted and approved by the state of Alaska. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
There are a lot of great jobs in Alaska, but Amber Stevens has one of the best. Just don't try to shake her hand. It's probably covered in fish slime. As a mammalogist at the Sea Life Center in Seward, Stevens spends her days with sea lions and seals, feeding and training them. APRN's Annie Feit dropped in for an impromptu training session recently with Woody, a 1,700-pound stellar sea lion who's lived at the Sea Life Center since 1998.
It is a great job. Every day is a different day. I mean, you never know. Start in the morning with sorting through lots of fish to cleaning up after the animals to, just the everyday training of them. So every day is definitely different and interesting, and we work with some phenomenal animals here. So
He's doing a little show.
What you're seeing with him is there's a bucket in front of me, and he's soliciting behavior, trying to figure out what I want. He thinks that there's a training session going on. So even though I'm not asking anything, he's kind of being a ham. It's like, well, what if I do this? Will you pay attention to me? And so I think he's pretty funny to me. He has a sense of humor. He knows who his trainers are. He will interact with them. And then he also knows who doesn't train him. And so a lot of the times it's really funny when men come through here because he acts all big and tough and guards his area. And right now you see he's offering all these different behaviors. So it's kind of fun. Currently, right now, he's eating, this is capelin. Herring is also a favorite of theirs. Salmon is their all-time favorite fish. He's also on pollock. In the past, they've eaten octopus, squid, sole. Good boy. What'd he bark? Good boy. Really watching his weight is a big thing, making sure he doesn't get too large, because with any of us, the more weight you put on, the less motivated you are to do things. So we put him on the scale all the time, watch his intake of food, and just really monitor that so that he doesn't get so big that he just doesn't want to move. So, hi, bud. You're good. I mean, our job as a trainer, being these guys being in captivity, is to keep their life as dynamic as we possibly can so that nothing's predictable, nothing's... It's fun. We can give them lots of enrichment, being with different animals, different pool locations. We have several toys that we can put in with them. His favorite toy is actually a fire hose. He likes to play with it and pull it around the pool. We can also freeze our fish into ice treats. And so they kind of have to figure out how to get the fish out of the ice. And so that's always a fun one. Well, these guys are very smart animals, so it's a pleasure to work with them. All right, bud. Finished. You're finished.
Amber Stevens is a mammalogist at the Seward Sea Life Center. Woody is a 16-year-old Stellar sea lion. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Ross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Mike Mason in Dillingham. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by the 2010 BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Nomination forms for teachers are available in local newspapers and at bpteachers.com. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.